The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Rabbit, first day of October in the year of the plague 2020. I'm just not understanding these polls. There is no way Lindsey Graham is tied in South Carolina. No way. But I want to urge all of my South Carolinians who are listening right now, get out there and vote early for Lindsey Graham. We need him to get Amy Coney Barrett confirmed. And I do mean we need him. It's going to be rough. I have a new Washington Post piece out on the torpedoes that they will put in the water at Justice Barrett and her hearings, which begin a week from Tuesday, will be contentious and revealing and I think dramatic. Yesterday, we continued to deal with the fallout of the debate, the biggest loser of which is Chris Wallace. I'm beginning to think that President Trump is winning the after debate war because Chris Wallace made it so obviously two against one. But the left continued to attack the president as a white supremacist. And even some of my friends at MSNBC picked up on this nonsense. Katie Turr said this, cut number 13.
It is still interesting. It is still interesting that the president cannot say the words together in a row. I condemn white supremacy. He's trying to say he doesn't know who the Proud Boys are. You know, it's been 18 hours of it being covered on cable news left and right. I think he probably does know who they are. And if he doesn't, maybe one of his aides might want to whisper it in his ear. But again, he will not say these words together. I condemn white supremacy. Instead, he defers to law enforcement.
Let's stop there. This is simply not correct. And I think it's up to the producers to tell Katie. I don't expect her to go out and do research. I expect her producers to let her know that's simply wrong and to put into the prompter things that don't make her look wrong. Cut number 12 from Grabian, please.
While we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, in violence on many sides.
As I said on Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally.
The vile, hate-filled poison of anti-Semitism must be condemned and confronted everywhere and anywhere it appears. There must be no tolerance for anti-Semitism in America or for any form of religious or racial hatred or prejudice. We must never ignore the vile poison of anti-Semitism or those who spread its venomous creed. With one voice, we must confront this hatred anywhere and everywhere it occurs. Our entire nation mourns the loss of life, prays for the wounded, and stands in solidarity with the Jewish community. We forcefully condemn the evil of anti-Semitism and hate, which must be defeated. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul.
So, look, I don't know whether Katie's producers are tricking her. Katie's a smart broadcaster. I've had her on the show. She's a friend. The president denounced white supremacists. He denounced white nationalists. He denounced white supremacy. I didn't hear the word white supremacist, but if you can, or white, actually, I heard them all. White supremacists, white nationalists, white supremacy, anti-Semitism, white nationalism, all of it. And he did it again on the White House lawn yesterday. Cut number three.
So he's got to condemn Antifa. Antifa is a very bad group.
Yeah. Mr. President, let me follow up. White supremacists, they clearly love you and support you. You welcome that.
I want law and order to be a very important part. It's a very important part of my campaign. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is law enforcement has to, police have to take care. And they should stop defunding the police like they've done in New York. Like they've done in New York. I just told you. I've always denounced any form of any of that you have to denounce. But I also, Joe Biden has to say something about Antifa. It's not a philosophy. These are people that hit people over the head with baseball bats. He's got to come out, and he's got to be strong, and he's got to condemn Antifa. And it's very important that he does it.
It's just remarkable what the media does when he's done it like 10 times, and everybody knows he's done it, but left-wing media continues to say he hasn't done it. Meanwhile, Donald Trump went to Duluth last night. Duluth, where he went in 2016, cut number 18.
That, we've got to change it. Who's going to do what we've done for you? Right? Another massive issue for Minnesota is the election of Joe Biden's plan to inundate your state with a historic flood of refugees. Biden and crazy Bernie Sanders have agreed on a manifesto. Did you see last night? I didn't agree after the show. They said, oh, actually he did. Oh, great. They fact-checked. They found out he made a mistake, slight mistake. It's the worst thing you've ever seen. But they pledged a 700% increase in refugees. 700%. Congratulations, Minnesota. Congratulations. Now, and what about Omar, where she gets caught harvesting? What the hell is going on? I hope your U.S. attorney is involved. What is going on with Omar? I've been reading these reports for 2 years about how corrupt and crooked she is. Let's get with it. Let's get with it. I mean, frankly, harvesting's terrible, but it's the least of the things that she has done. How the hell? Then she tells us how to run our country. Can you believe it? How the hell did Minnesota elect her? What the hell is wrong with you people? Right? What the hell happened? These guys in the... Stand up. Are you a big fan of Omar? I don't think so. Stand up. Look at this guy. It looks like nobody's going to fight him. I don't think you're a big fan of Omar, right? No, she's been crooked for a long time. This is the least of it. It's time.
Ilhan Omar, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, has long been a member of the squad, long been a target of the president. Got it last night. There is a Veritas video suggesting her campaign is tied in with, and she may not be behind it, but it certainly is working for her, ballot harvesting of the illegal sort. He also said what he did last night, cut number 19.
Last night, I did what the corrupt media has refused to do. I held Joe Biden accountable for his 47 years of lies, 47 years of betrayals, and 47 years of failure. I held Joe accountable for shipping your jobs and dreams abroad
and for bowing to the violent mob at home. Can you imagine these people, the way they take over these Democrat cities? I don't even believe it. The whole nation saw the truth. Did you see last night? Name one. I said, Sleepy Joe, name one law enforcement group that supports you. And then Chris Wallace says, don't do that. That's not. Can you believe this guy? I was debating two people last night.
That's the point. That is the key point. He was debating two people, and he is bouncing right off of it. I think he's going to have a good week. Don't go anywhere, America, except over to the market report brought to you by Birch Gold. Text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. And get part of your investments into gold. We're going to have another great day in the market today. Overseas, England and Germany are up. Yesterday, the Dow was up 329, NASDAQ up 82, S&P up 27. October's off to a big start. Gold bounced to 1902. Have you got some gold? You have to go to HughGold.com or transfer part of your IRA 401k by texting my name, Hugh, to 474747. 10 to 25% of your portfolio, please. HughGold.com, HughGold.com. Come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about a dollar a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Your doorstep is just a click away. We'll get together one of these days. How can you be as nice as me? Welcome back, America. Many of you are stepping up to support Alliance Defending Freedom, the nonprofit legal organization that fights for you every single day. You've heard over the years how much we depend upon ADF. Alliance Defending Freedom keeps religious liberty more than a slogan, but a reality for people across the United States, for churches large and small, for individual business owners who simply don't want to bend the knee. Rod Dreher's new book is such a wake-up call to Christians and believers around the world that soft totalitarianism in this country and elsewhere is coming for them. And Alliance Defending Freedom is standing in the gap, but they need you to stand there with them. Here is Tyson Langhofer, director of ADF Center for Academic Freedom.
I protect the rights of students and faculty at public universities so that everyone can freely participate in the marketplace of ideas. And unfortunately, many religious students and conservative students and faculty are routinely discriminated against on our public university campuses because they're expressing views that are kind of contrary to the prevailing orthodoxy on campus.
You may be that college student whose religious freedom has been under attack. You may be that faculty member who is under assault from the left wing on your campus. Look, I've been on campus for 25 years. I know what the faculty is like. But the ADF is there. No one is going to mess around with me because I teach con law and I know this stuff, but they're going to mess around with a lot of people. Free legal counsel comes from Alliance Defending Freedom only because of the generosity of people like you. ADF is counting on men and women like you to help protect other people who are being persecuted in the United States because of their faith, and I mean persecuted, driven off their campuses, driven out of their jobs, made to bend the knee. Alliance Defending Freedom needs financial help. Can you spare 100? Can you spare more? I need you to go to the banner at HughHewitt.com. It's at the very top. I'm looking for what it says. It says defend your freedom at the very top. You can't just wait for it to load and it comes up, or you can call 866-359-9644 to help Alliance Defending Freedom keep defending your freedom. That's 866-359-9644 or at HughHewitt.com. I did a podcast with Megyn Kelly yesterday, my old friend Megyn. She's got a new podcast going. We talked about the debate mess two nights ago, cut number 20.
Is that what you think happened? He had the energy that no one thought he would. He absolutely went the 90 minutes. He could have kept going for another 90 minutes. And so the battle of low expectations was clearly won by Joe Biden. And do you agree with that, Megan? I think he performed far above what I think many of the president's supporters hoped he would not be able to do.
Definitely. He seemed cogent. He didn't have any senior moments. And that in and of itself was a win for him.
Agree.
But what did you think, like, overall? First of all, just not Trump, not Biden, but just rate the debate on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the greatest thing you've ever seen, 1 being a total disaster and awful. What would you rate this debate?
Worst debate I've ever seen. I've been watching them since 1976. This represented a low point, but in some respects, it reflects where the country is. The country is so deeply divided that old friends can't have civil conversations, so I doubt we can expect political opponents for the highest job to do so. But to call the president of the United States a clown and a fool, and to call him a liar and a bigot, and for the president of the United States to continually interrupt, and for Chris Wallace to lose control. You and I have both had the unenviable job of trying to keep Donald Trump in his lane at a debate. I've got my Trump tattoos. You have more of them than I do. But Chris last night, I think, would have been better served if he just laid back, crossed his arms, and let them go at it.
That's what I think. I'll tell you a little bit more later. Megan thought it was pretty amusing. I've dubbed it the Red Wedding Debate after the memorable episode of Games of Thrones. But whether or not it was the Red Wedding Debate, it is not going to be anybody's idea of how to run a debate. The Presidential Commission is trying to cover up for the fact that Chris Wallace hates Trump. And so it was 2-1. And they said, oh, we'll make some changes. Look, all you need to do, Steve Scully will be fine. All you need to do is find a moderator who will be fair. Joe Biden interrupted first. Joe Biden was the first one to do it. And Trump mirrors whatever he's dealt. The hand that he's dealt, he deals with. And it was 2-1. He did fine. There will be 2 more debates. Let me remind you, though, keepamericaamerica.com. Please go to keepamericaamerica.com. The largest get out there. It's a turnout election in Ohio, in Minnesota, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in North Carolina. We need you to be part of KeepAmericaAmerica.com, great sponsor of the show from the Job Creator Network. KeepAmericaAmerica.com. Go there now. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined from Israel by Dr. Michael Oren. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. We're very much locked down here, Hugh.
I know that. I saw that you had an unfortunate number of infections and fatalities in Israel yesterday. I hope your fast was easy, but it's a pretty grim time in the state of Israel right now.
It is not a happy country right now.
This is a happy book. I hold the Night Archer, and I'm going to make a little bit of an engagement sandwich. I'm going to talk about a couple stories in the Night Archer. Then I'm going to talk about your piece in the National Interest, and I'm going to go back to the Night Archer because we asked for more time this morning. So I want to begin with what's a parent to do, because I was reading it last night to the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, and I said, this is about you, because I've got steely gray hair, right? And I hope I've got at least one daughter and one son. I won't talk about people about my family. And they're going to pass by the mantle, and I hope my picture's on it after I go to my reward.
But
well, tell people, I think this is the funniest of the short stories. It's just very, very funny.
It's so quite surprising. I wrote this story. I didn't think anyone was going to pay attention to it. And I've got a lot of responses from people of our generation who know what this feels like. Now, I can't spoil for your readers, but we've all been through the situation as parents where our teenage kids are upstairs and they're getting ready to go out on a date. They're going to be terrified of what kind of clothes they're wearing or what kind of clothes they're not wearing, who they're going out on this date with. And this story takes that trope and turns it on its head.
Yeah, well, let me tell people, my mother predeceased my father. They're both gone to their reward now. May they may their souls and memories be blessed. But my dad was alone for a few years, and so he started stepping out. And you know what? We were fine with that. But this is just a funny story, and I want everyone to read What's a Parent to Do. Now, the second one, not so funny, Alien Report. It's kind of grim. And in fact, you use the number 605-431. Did anyone give you pushback on the fact that of a different generation, Jews and numbers didn't really want to talk about much?
No pushback on that at all. This is where you thought of what would happen if a million Jews go our state in terms of outer space and had to determine whether the alien wanted to land it on Earth, whether that's been on Earth, had to get some research from our computer about what the human race was like and whether it was really worth the alien's while to interact with this race.
Now, Michael Oren, let me tell you, Doctor, I got to interrupt you. We're going to call you back because I think everyone in Israel is locked down and they're all using their wireless. So your wireless is breaking up because even though it's the high tech country, everybody in the state of Israel is using their wireless this morning. What time is it there right now, Doctor Oren?
It is 1:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, so everybody in the entire country and every kid is playing a video game, and I think your broadband is breaking down. I hope Iron Dorm is alert, but look for your phone. We're calling you on your phone so that we can hear people talk to you about it. In the meantime, I will tell people the Night Archer is available at Amazon.com, and I want you very much to go and get it. You're going to love this. I have been rationing the number, and I saved Metaxas to the end. Dr. Oren told me last week I was going to like Metaxas the most. Okay, Dr. Oren, let's go back to Alien Report. Let's start over again with the premise because I found this to be fascinating.
So back to Alien Report. I asked myself, what would happen if an alien came into our galaxy, into our solar system, and had to determine whether it was worth his while or its while to visit Earth with its major inhabitant called the human race? And the alien consults his source of information, it's kind of a supercomputer, and gets a printout. And what this printout has to say about the human race, a race that will, you know, kill one another for a piece of cloth, a flag, or has strange mating habits and strange eating habits because it eats some animals, but it also feeds other animals and lives with some animals. Is very strange for this alien. So the alien in the report is really the human race.
It's really remarkable. Talk about a 30,000 foot view of something. It's a 300 million foot view of something, and it's of us. And I'm not sure it's complimentary, right? I wouldn't say it's complimentary.
Well, I'm not going to, again, spoil the story and tell you what the alien's conclusion is at the end of it.
Well, I am going to go and link it to, though, another story I found to be connected. Now, you do not connect them in space in The Night Archer, which is the name of the collection of Michael Oren's new short stories. We'll get to the ambassador and politics and all that in just a second. But Day 8. Don't you think Day 8 and Alien Report are connected?
Well, they're sort of, I would say, critical views of human nature. Obviously, I'm interested in faith. I'm a person of faith. And I'm engaging with the Bible, and I asked myself, at what point did God, and why did God decide to imbue human beings with a soul? And what are the ramifications of giving souls to human beings? Whose purposes does it serve? Does it serve God, or does it also serve Satan? And so this story is a conversation between Satan and God about whether human beings should have souls.
You know, our mutual friend Dennis Prager and I have spent a lot of time together over 30 years in broadcast in a lot of small planes and large rooms. And Dennis has explained to me his view of Job and that Satan in Job is not the way that Christians understand Satan. Satan's just kind of a creature. And you adopt Dennis's view of Satan being an interlocutor, though made by God for whatever reason, as being an interlocutor with God during the days of creation. It's very expanding for a Christian mind, Michael. Have people talked to you about this one?
You know what they talk to me most about is the story about the penitent, which is a story that takes place in a church.
I haven't read that one yet. Okay, I haven't gotten there. I bounce around. As I told people, I'm rationing short stories to me, one or two a night. They get me to sleep, and because they caused in COVID dreams. I don't know if you had COVID dreams in Israel. Everyone in America is having weird dreams. It's best to read something that is not upsetting but is interesting and not about yourself before you go to sleep. That's actually what I tell people. Have you found that to be your experience?
It is my experience indeed. And sleep is very disruptive, and there's no morning and there's no night. Very much so. Let me tell you about this story in the background, too, because all these stories have reflected my experiences. I grew up as the only Jewish kid in a non-Jewish neighborhood, and I was fascinated with Christianity in an intellectual way. And one day I actually went down and knocked on the Baptist church and asked Pastor Miller if he would teach me the New Testament without proselytizing me. And he did, and I learned the Testament quite well, New Testament quite well. And then many years later, I became the advisor on church affairs to Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. So my knowledge of the New Testament came very much in handy. And later, as an ambassador and in government, I interacted with evangelical communities from Christian communities around the world, and it came in handy. So for me to put myself as a writer in a church is very natural. And this is about a preacher. It's about a pastor who has a rather startling revelation that he wants to make to his congregation, his community. And the story is told actually from the perspective of his wife, who's sitting with their two sons in the front pew, and how she reacts to this revelation.
Oh, I will look. That will be on my list tonight. Let me ask you about Rosen in Paradise. This is very perplexing. This is hard. It's not as hard as Metaxas, which I'm going to come back to. But Rosen in Paradise, there's a backstory to this story somewhere. I think it's actually one of the more difficult ones to get my arms around. Tell me the backstory of Rosen in Paradise.
Well, it's also about faith, as you know.
Yes.
But it's about Philip Roth. And so, you know, I'm a Rothian. I grew up reading Philip Roth. I also grew up in the community near Philip Roth's community. My father worked in the hospital that is mentioned in every single Philip Roth book. I knew some of the characters in his books. And Philip Roth made a career out of making fun of his parents, of his family.
Yes.
If you read the initial books of, you know, Goodbye Columbus, certainly, Portnoy's Complaint. But his later books really can all be summed up in one line, which is Paradise Lost. And the paradise of Philip Roth was Jewish Newark, the Wequaic section of Newark between, say, 1946 and 1954. That was in every book. He's longing to go back to this perfect world.
He wants to go back to that suburb. He wants to go back to that temple. Yes.
Yes, of course. And in this book, we have a writer who's much like Philip Roth. His name is Rosen, who finds out that he's dead. And he has come back to this neighborhood. And in the late 40s, he's almost run over by a Studebaker in the first line. And he has to determine whether he has come back to heaven or to hell. And it's not quite clear, I think, to the end of the book, to the end of the story.
Not until the end. And the rabbi is fascinating. Both how he begins at the beginning, how he is portrayed in Portnoy's books, or in Roth's books, in Portnoy's Complaint, and in this one. I'll come back to Metaxas in a second. Flash forward. In The National Interest, you write about the perils of engagement. Look, I think this is a dangerous cliff we walk on, and if Joe Biden wins, we're going to fall off of it again. Do you agree with my assessment?
I believe it's that, you know, again, I'm always going to say I'm not going to get involved in the U.S. presidential election, but there's only one person on the planet who can resuscitate Mahmoud Abbas as a person who will stop all peace efforts in the Middle East. There's only one person who can bring the Iranians back to dominate the Middle East, and that is Joe Biden. By ending the Trump peace plan, by ending the great movement toward peace between Israel and Arab nations around our region, and by restoring the Iran nuclear deal, which by the way, he has said expressly that he's going to do both those things.
Yeah, it didn't come up at the debate. I was very, very frustrated. The most significant international issue other than China is whether or not we leave Iran in the corner into which Donald Trump has pushed them. And it didn't come up very quickly. You told me 2 weeks ago that in The Night Archer, I would most enjoy Metaxas. I will say I am most challenged by Metaxas. I have had to go through it twice. I know my Plato. I studied under Harvey Mansfield. You know, Harvey. I am confounded. I am challenged. How long did it take you to write this, and what were you thinking?
What was I thinking? Lord knows. I was on a trip with my wife across the southern part of the United States. We've always wanted to do the Freedom Trail through Montgomery and Selma. And somewhere along the line, this story hit me. And the story takes place in 1841 in an American military outpost at the base of the Rocky Mountains. And it's told in the form of dispatches from the commander of this post to his regional commander.
A very literate commander, a very literate man.
Well, he has been educated. His father was a pastor, but also a person who taught him a Greek philosophy. And so he's brought up in the two traditions. Now, this becomes important, the two traditions. And in the course of commanding this post, this commander comes in contact with, for want of a better word, a monster. And the word metaxas in Greek sounds a lot like the Native American word for monster. And I did a lot of research for this, I used my tools as a historian to find out about that Native American lore about mountain monsters, but also to learn the language, Hugh. I went back and read dispatches.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Dispatches from the 1840s to get the language just right, even the way the dispatches were written, even the form. So I wanted to be very authentic. And, you know, I taught military history, including at your alma mater. I taught military history, so I know the weapons. I know the uniforms. But the essence of this story, Metaxas, and in Greek philosophy, has to do with the dual nature of human beings. We're part God, we're part men, we're part monsters. The Greeks were fascinated by this, with the centaurs and monitors, and that's what this is about.
It is so good.
Are we monsters?
I want people to go and get The Night Archer, if only to read about. It's basically Grendel. Right. Grendel in the mountains. It's basically, and it's Jerusalem and Athens. We call the two traditions bound together in a way I did not see coming. But I often don't see a lot of things coming that Michael Oren brings. He'll be back next week. The Night Archer is at Amazon. Dr. Oren, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Follow him on Twitter at Dr. Michael Oren. Get The Night Archer at Amazon.com. Stay tuned, America. Welcome back, America. I am Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for listening. I want to play something to you by Chuck Schumer yesterday on MSNBC with Joy Reid. You need to hear this. Cut number 10.
In the Senate, we are using all the tactics we can to slow the thing down.
Would that include adding, if the Senate becomes a Democratic majority, adding D.C. and Puerto Rico as states and ending the filibuster?
I would. Believe me, on D.C. and Puerto Rico, particularly if Puerto Rico votes for it, D.C. already has voted for it and wants it. I'd love to make them states.
Okay.
And as for the filibuster, I'm not busting my chops to become majority leader to do very little or nothing. We are going to get a whole lot done. And as I've said, everything is on the table.
All right. So that is what America needs to know. If you vote for the Republicans, things are going to be great in the country. The recovery will go on. The vaccine will be distributed. We will be back to full employment. We will be strong. We will confront China. If you vote for the Democrats, the Republic is going to be over. And I am not exaggerating. When you add four senators, first of all, it's unconstitutional for D.C. to have senators. It's clear on the face of the document it was not intended to be a state. It was intended to be a federal city. It was not intended to have representation. It should be struck down. But they will try. Puerto Rico, by the way, can be added as a territory and a state. It is part of the Republican platform. I have no problem with that, actually. That's not radical. D.C. is radical. What's very radical is ending this legislative filibuster. That means jam downs. And when they do that, they're also going to expand the court. And Joe Biden would not answer about the court. He would not answer about the court. Instead, he said weird stuff yesterday. Cut number 16.
It's been confirmed by multiple sources. They think that those of us who sign up and put our country on, put our lives on the line, are veterans, as I mentioned earlier.
Those of us? He's not a veteran. I'm not a veteran. No one on my team is a veteran. We got veterans in the family. We got active duty in the family. We are a Blue Star family, but we are not veterans. I am not a veteran. Joe, honestly, he got through the debate. I knew he would. I knew they were playing rope-a-dope, but they can't keep him on script. Secondly, he said this at the Johnstown, Pennsylvania speech yesterday, cut number 17.
He didn't speak to you or the American people about the concerns. Not even once last night did he say a word about anything. Seriously, think about it. Not
it's a
once.
Lie. Just a lie. They spent an entire segment of the debate on COVID. It's just a lie. Look, here's what I said about the debate with Megyn Kelly in a podcast yesterday. Go to iTunes, sign up for the Megyn Kelly podcast. It was great fun talking to Megyn again. Cut number 21.
All right. I have one final question for you,
sure,
Mr. Vice President. If Senate Republicans, we were talking originally about the Supreme Court here, if Senate Republicans go ahead and confirm Justice Barrett, there has been talk about ending the filibuster, or even packing the court, adding to the nine justices there. You call this a distraction by the president, but in fact, it wasn't brought up by the president. It was brought up by some of your Democratic colleagues in the Congress. So my question to you is, you have refused in the past to talk about it. Are you willing to tell the American people tonight whether or not you will support either ending the filibuster or packing the court?
Whatever position I take on that, that'll become the issue. The issue is the American people should speak. You should go out and vote. You're in voting now. Vote and let your senators know how strongly you feel. Vote now.
Are you going to pack the
court? Make sure you, in fact, let people know.
He doesn't want
to answer
the question.
I'm not going to answer the question.
Why would you answer that
question? Because the question is, the question is,
the radical left.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This is
on your
list. I'm going to come back to Megan and I later. Megan and I talk about that exchange. Understand, the Democratic nominee has to answer whether he will pack the court. To pack the court is to destroy the republic. To pack the court is to undermine the rule of law. To pack the court is to part history with America. To pack the court is to try and do what radical Franklin Delano Roosevelt could not do at his most radical. His own Democratic Party rejected it in 1937. It's never been done. It is a torch to the raw, dry wood of America to pack the court. And Joe Biden would not rule it out. He's got to be asked every day, every hour, will you pack the court? And he's not allowed to dodge it in every debate. He should be asked, will you today answer, will you pack the court? Hour number two coming up, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.